Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program. I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you are listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Earlier this week, McDonald's CEO Steve Estabrook, the guy in charge of all the McDonald's worldwide, was fired for violating the company's policy by having a consensual relationship with a subordinate employee. Estabrook is divorced, and it's not illegal to have a consensual relationship with a work subordinate. However, the power dynamic is problematic, as the subordinate may feel forced into a relationship to keep his or her job. Corporate executives have long gotten away with this behavior, but that's starting to change. Estabrook's firing shows how strict companies have become about workplace dating, as stories of rampant sexual harassment have rocked the business world, as well as entertainment and politics. As we mark Women's Abuse Prevention Month in Northumberland, it is a good time to reflect not just on domestic abuse. Let's also take a few moments to think about abuse in the workplace. With me to talk about all of this and more, including Women's Abuse Prevention Month, is none other than Nancy Johnson, Executive Director of Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center. Welcome, Nancy.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
When it comes to dealing with women's abuse in our community, what is the most important conversation we should be having right now?
I think that that's a really great question. I think part of the messaging that we have in November is to have these important conversations, and the purple scarves that we sell, it's really just a symbol of courage that it takes for a woman to leave an abusive relationship. But we know that courage alone is not enough, which is one of the taglines for this Wrapped in Courage campaign in November, because it's not enough for just a woman to be courageous to leave. It takes a whole community to change the course of domestic violence and start to decrease this important issue.
So when you talk about engaging the community in this, I know through your various fundraisers, like you yep. just mentioned, the scarves, and of course there's the Walk a Mile in Red Shoes, and yep. all the other good things that you do to raise money. That's only one aspect of it. What else are you talking about when you talk about us being engaged in
yeah.
this?
I think we continue to try to... This issue used to be secretive, right, for many years, and I think there's a lot of stigma around this, that we didn't talk about domestic violence, that it was considered a private issue that happened behind closed doors. So coming on and having these conversations with you, Rob, the conversations we're having in schools, the conversations we're having in workplaces, to ensure that... that it's not a secretive issue, and that we all play a part in ending gender-based violence.
But, you know, sometimes I think that gender-based violence is sort of getting like food banks and drunk driving, that we've been talking about this for decades. Mm-hmm. I just read a report that just came out a couple months ago about women's shelters across the country. It's been 40 years we've had women's shelters.
Yeah.
And you look at the statistics and they all say that they're packed mm-hmm. or over capacity like yours.
Yeah.
I mean... When do we start to see the tide recede?
Yeah. Well, I'm really hoping that it does in my lifetime, I'll tell you, because I've been doing this for 30 years. One of the interesting piece in this is it's really hard to determine, you know, it can be a good thing that that there's so many people coming into our shelters, because for a long time, women didn't access service. They didn't know that services existed, and they were afraid to come forward and tell somebody for the first time. So as much as it can be disheartening to see the statistics and the busyness of organizations like Cornerstone across Canada, I think we can't lose hope. I believe that there's been change for sure in the 30 years that I've been doing this. One of the biggest changes that I see is community awareness. And we receive tremendous support from our community, not just financial, but people are interested in having these conversations. When we invite people in, we had some municipal counselors come to our organization yesterday, and we had a conversation with them. And they were really interested to know how they can be part of the solution. And they weren't afraid to have that conversation. They weren't afraid to come into our organization and talk about the issues. That has not always been the case, for sure. Particularly with engaging men, that's been an uphill battle. But again, I really like to see the success that we've had here in Northumberland County of having these conversations. You and I are having this conversation right now. That might not have happened. That probably wouldn't have happened 20 years ago, Rob.
So a lot of it's around talk. What can people do? When, you know, it's good that we'll talk about this and, you know, men may be prepared to say, you know, I need to do more. But what has to be done so that we start to experience a cultural shift rather than just simply an acknowledgement?
Yeah, I think it really starts with the youngest kids in our communities. And I really believe strongly in prevention programs, and that's something that we do at Cornerstone, because we need to talk about young boys and young men and older men about toxic masculinity, about what a healthy relationship is like, and we need to have those conversations with young girls too. So the conversations, I think, are absolutely critical, because without those, you know, you need to raise awareness, you need to educate our kids and adults. We need to encourage people to come forward. So many women say, you know, it just took telling one person. It was the courage to tell one person. And whether that's your neighbor, your friend, your family, your coworker, your boss, telling that one person, and that one person knows, hey, I've heard of Cornerstone because they're out there talking all the time. Here's their number. Go and talk to them. So that's really why we want to have a prominent face in our community, because we want everyone to know that there is a service like this in Northumberland County.
When you talk about reaching out to young men, wasn't so long ago that we had an incident with the Coburg Cougars, and I know that there was some conversations between Cornerstone and the Cougars organization. Is that still ongoing? Are you still providing programs to the young players?
We haven't provided any programs right now, but I have to say that it was the Coburg Cougars who reached out to us, as well as the Port Hope Panthers, that they wanted to be part of our Walk a Mile. So both of the teams came out, showed their support. I think that that was a really important initiative. I think that's good, great role modeling for young guys. We know, whether we like it or not, that that young guys can be looking up to our older hockey players, particularly the Cougars and the Panthers. So I think that that was great role modeling, and we were happy to see that.
In the news just in this past week, we saw that Antonio Cerimento is going to be going back into court on November 13th. And I just wonder, he was the former artistic director at the Capitol Theater.
Yeah.
He's facing some charges around sexual assault. But how important is a case like this when it involves such a high-profile individual? I was wondering, you know, is it like our sort of our own Gian Gomeshi trial with the CBC host who faced a sexual assault trial, and that started a whole conversation around this, because all the time we see, I mean, these quick cases go through our courts on a very regular basis. Does this make a difference in terms of getting that conversation out and talking about sexual assault?
I think that that's a great point, Rob. I think that things like this can have can have that impetus for us to have difficult conversations, because we know that sexual violence is a significant issue, and one that is wildly underreported. So when it does get brought up, because so few get reported, certainly even fewer ever get to court, I think it's an important opportunity to have these conversations and again raise awareness about sexual violence.
I'd like to talk a bit more about things that happen in the workplace, because we do talk a lot about domestic, and we sort of have this vision of this is the only type of sexual abuse that takes place. Can we talk a bit about abuse in the workplace? How do you define abuse in the workplace happening? What sort of things go on that affect?
Well, I think one of the things that I wanted to briefly talk about today, Rob, because it's a point in history that not everybody might know, but how the workplace violence and harassment legislation came about was after the death of a nurse at Hotel Du Grace Hospital in Windsor. Mm-hmm. And this nurse's name was Laurie DuPont, and Laurie DuPont was killed by her former partner in 2005. He was an anesthesiologist at the hospital. It was known that there was significant abuse. She took measures to end that relationship. People were aware of that abusive relationship in the workplace. She had asked for some accommodations, such as not to be on the same shift with him, and that was not listened to. The other thing that's important with this anesthesiologist is he had a history in the hospital for violent and abusive behavior. And it wasn't just to Laurie, it was to his coworkers, particularly to his, what he would have considered his subordinates, to nurses. And after Laurie was tragically killed in her workplace by the anesthesiologist, there was a coroner's inquest, of course, in these matters. And there were a number of significant recommendations that came out of that coroner's inquest. And one of the things that came out of the tragic death of this lovely nurse was workplace violence and harassment policies in the workplace. And it's called Bill 168.
So describe what makes up Bill 168. What are some of the provisions in it?
Yeah, the Bill 168, the onus is on the employer to ensure that they have appropriate policies. They define what workplace violence and harassment is in the workplace, that there are appropriate policies and procedures. There are risk assessments done in individual workplaces to look at risk and then put in put in some measures to ensure that we have a safe workplace. There's also, the policy also has to refer to how complaints are investigated as well. So there's strong responsibility on employers to ensure that we're taking every measure we can to make sure that our workplaces are safe.
And I guess why I mentioned the McDonald's incident earlier this week is because, again, there was not necessarily anything untoward, but it's just the perception of the fact that there could be a power relationship there and nobody
Absolutely.
Knows.
Absolutely. I think code of conduct is really important. And I can't remember in the McDonald's if there was, an employee code of conduct. But I think that that's really important in workplaces, that you need to, set that tone of what will be tolerated in a workplace and what won't, and that you have follow-up when those codes of conduct, policies and procedures are not followed. I think it's really important.
Now, you talked in your example of the nurse, a very extreme example.
Yes.
And when we talked about the court case locally, I mean, we're talking again about a certain type of behavior.
Yes.
But yet abuse in the workplace has many faces. I know that, for example, they can talk about verbal abuse or humiliating behavior, threats to people, physical violence, and then unwanted sexual advances or attention, not just the actual sexual harassment itself. Can you describe for us that sort of spectrum of things that take place, and what, if I was a person listening to this, what should I be aware of, or what should I be sensitive to, both as an employer and as an employee?
Well, I think you described it really well, Rob. It can be verbal comments. One of the important pieces in this legislation as well is it can also be the perceived threat of violence and harassment, because sometimes what we know in workplace bullying, particular, is it can be not so obvious, it can be quite underhanded. So again, I think it's important that each workplace really defines that. And I really believe in, setting the tone. It's important. And with the workplace violence and harassment policies as well, there are, there are a number of measures you have to do. I believe if you have more than 5 employees, your workplace violence and harassment policy has to be posted. With significant definition of what, how you define that.
But aren't there times, you hear people say, oh, we were just joking around, or, I wasn't really being serious,
Yep.
I can't even say somebody looks nice anymore at work, and those kinds of complaints. What do people need to understand about this act of trying to minimize these kinds of things versus what is actually going on, the dynamic actually going on? What's the danger in that?
Again, I think it's important that people are held responsible for that. I think if there's a question in your mind that this could be perceived as, a racist joke or a sexist joke, or could be perceived as a threat to another colleague, I think there's a significant level of responsibility to ensure we're conducting ourselves in a professional and appropriate way. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that.
The Me Too movement in Canada has been around, Me Too has been around since October of 2017. What's been the impact of the Me Too movement in Canada to sort of the opening up of a lot of the things that we've been talking about over the last few minutes?
I think it's a watershed moment, was that Me Too movement, in my opinion. And I think, I think there is a sense of people knowing that they need to be more mindful, and people will, again, be upset by that and say, I can't even make a joke anymore without it being perceived in the wrong way. But at the same time, I think it's important to hold people accountable. And I think we do need to be more sensitive to each other's feelings and how that might be perceived. And again, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
One of the things that has been shown statistically is since the Me Too movement that there's been a sharp rise in people being more open about, not as things we talked about earlier, being more open to seeking help for domestic violence. Also in the workplace, we're seeing more things come to the fore, people stepping forward, actually laying charges or making formal complaints. Locally, what are you seeing in terms of the Me Too attitude? And how is it playing out in Northumberland?
I think we continue to garner more support from our community. I think people are interested in hearing about these issues. More doors are being opened for us to come and have conversations on radio, on TV, in the media. So I think that's a great opportunity for us to continue to build momentum, to talk about this issue, to make real changes. So I see that happening, and we just continue to... we're approached for new community collaborations, particularly with Cobourg Police. We have a number of community collaborations, which I think will really enhance victim services and how we respond to domestic violence and sexual violence across the county.
What about, though, beyond just the issue of women's abuse, but of women's rights, I notice... we have more women speaking out, but then when you look at it locally, there's lots of business women's groups, which in support for women entrepreneurs, but oftentimes these things focus on women who are leaders. What about those who are not in leadership roles or minorities that don't get the same attention?
Yeah.
What is being done to help those women so that they feel empowered to take the steps that they need to take?
Right. We certainly, we provide groups for women, and I know a number of other service agencies does as well. I believe the Port Hope Northumberland Community Health Center does groups. Rebound Child and Youth does some work with younger girls. Alderville Shelter as well does groups with women to talk about issues of empowerment. Not all those women have experienced violence. It can be a matter of, talking about their life experience and how they can feel like they have some equal power in this community and in the world.
Okay, going forward then, what should we be, as the month unfolds, are there any special things going on other than, of course, the sale of the scarves and the very cool bandanas for your puppy? And
it's for your pets. For your pets. It's not just puppies, because people with cats might want to wear the...
You think you could get a cat to wear a bandana? That's empowering to you. Yes. Tell us more about what's going on, Noah.
Yeah. So certainly we will continue to have some conversations on November 25th, which is the United Nations has designated the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. There are a number of us traveling to Queen's Park. I'm really hoping to be able to clear my schedule so that I can attend Queen's Park, and we go and we they have some conversation, and they talk about November 25th. They talk about November Prevention Month, and we get a big photo. And again, we're trying to garner the support, obviously, of the provincial government and other levels of government too. I think it's really important that we have conversations at the municipal level, which we're having at, certainly at Cornerstone. I continue to have conversations with David Piccini, our MPP, and I will be welcoming Philip Lawrence into our organization so that I can have a preliminary discussion with him, because I think it's important that the feds play a part in this as well.
You've often talked in our numerous conversations about the overcapacity of the shelter. Is there any indications at all from any level of government that you're going to get some support to extend the number of beds and also the transitional programs that you offer?
Yeah, I think, I've talked about it's not as simple as just opening up our beds, because we need operating dollars. We continue to lobby with Ontario Association of Interval and Transition Houses to talk about the funding, the lack of funding in our sector. We're a poor sector. That's why we have to fundraise so much. And that's not unique here in Northumberland County. It's what is happening across the province. We're hoping that they're listening. They continue to have a number of conversations with OAuth and a number of us across province. So let's hope. I think the municipality as well, we're having conversations, particularly around housing issues with municipality. And again, I will be really interested to hear from Philip Lawrence what his understanding of is on the issue, and to educate him about the current situation in Northumberland County.
Just very quickly, the affordable housing piece, why is that a significant one for people who use your services?
It's very significant because, as we know, there is a significant lack of affordable housing in Northumberland County. Women are coming into the shelter and they are staying longer and longer because they can't find safe and affordable housing. So it really bottlenecks the shelter so that women are having to stay longer, and then we can't be bringing in people who need the emergency service. So it's a very significant issue.
So if I'm listening right now, what would be one thing you would ask me to do over this month that I could actually do that would help prevent abuse of women?
I think have conversations. I think people are afraid to ask women if they are being abused. I think sometimes there are signs and there are symptoms, but people are afraid to ask because they'll say to me, well, if I ask and she says yes, I don't know what to do. So one of the things that they could do, certainly there's a lot of resources on our website. There's resources through Neighbors, Friends, and Family, which is a provincial campaign that gives people resources to have these conversations, to know what to say when a neighbor, friend, or family says to you, I'm being abused. If there's any, if there's any questions that people have who are listening, Rob, I just encourage them to give me a call at Cornerstone, or they can call our support line 372-0746. That phone line is answered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So people who are calling that line are not just people who have experienced abuse. Sometimes it is a father, a cousin, a son who's saying, I know somebody in this situation and I just don't know what to do. So that's really important. Reach out and, get some more information.
Nancy Johnson, thank you so much for coming in today and talking to me. I truly appreciate it. And I wish you all the best as you go forward with the month and all the great things you're going to be doing.
Thanks, Rob.
And I want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. If you have any suggestions about guests you would like to hear on the show, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com with your ideas. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. I will read out a selection of comments on next week's show. If you'd like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy day to listen in, and I hope over the next week you will continue to consider this.